Godspeed with Carol and Michael Hollenbach, Sundays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Godspeed Institute, an enlightening and positive forum exploring the world's religions and spiritual belief systems as an on-air classroom in an effort to help people better understand each other, promote tolerance, and foster peace. I'm your host, Carol Hollenbach. James Miller is Associate Professor of Chinese Religions at Queen's School of Religion, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario, Canada. He is known principally as a scholar of Taoism, the organized indigenous religion of China. His work has involved translating and interpreting texts from the medieval Chinese religious movement known as the Way of Highest Clarity. More broadly, he studies the way religions construct images of nature and influence values and behavior towards nature and the environment. His current research engages the way that Taoism is being constructed as a, quote, green religion in China and abroad. While maintaining a critical scholarly attitude towards this topic, he argues that religious values can play an important role in mobilizing a broad cultural engagement with environmental issues. He is the author of Taoism, A Beginner's Guide, Taoism and Ecology, The Way of Highest Clarity, Nature, Vision, and Revelation in Medieval China, and Chinese Religions in Contemporary Societies. James, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, Carol.
Now, there's a phrase in your bio that intrigues me, that of Taoism as the organized indigenous religion of China. Normally, we wouldn't consider an organized religion in an indigenous context, so why don't we begin there?
Sure.
How is Taoism the indigenous religion of China?
As I'm sure you know, China, although it's dominated by a particular ethnic group, the Han people, who are 93% comprising, has for at least 2,000 years been of a civilization that has never had one core set of values or beliefs or identity to it, but rather has embraced a kind of religious pluralism. And people who study the history of China are quite intrigued by this, because often we associate ethnic groups with one particular religious tradition. But in China, that for most of its recorded history, has never been the case. And the main religious influences on China have been Taoism, which is the indigenous religion, by which we mean that it's the homegrown religion. It's the religion developed by Chinese people. But also the other major religious influence in China we have is Buddhism, which, of course, originally came from India and was transmitted to China by Buddhist monks. And that has become such a key part of Chinese religious culture and religious identity that many people forget that, of course, this was originally regarded as a foreign religion, something that came into China, but it firmly established itself as part of Chinese culture. And then thirdly, we have Confucianism, which is often very confusing for people in the outside of China to understand how to understand the Confucianism. Is it a kind of a philosophy, a religion?
Right.
How does it fit into? But that certainly has been the other kind of third major spiritual tradition, spiritual force that has been such a key element of Chinese culture. And throughout Chinese history, these three traditions have played varying roles in influencing culture, art, philosophy, politics, and so I use the phrase indigenous religion to identify Taoism as a clearly a religious tradition, but one that originated in China. And then I use the word organized, because in the bio you said referred to China as an organized indigenous religion, and that's to make a contrast between Taoism, which has functioned as a something like a national religion in China, with an organization with priests and hierarchies and monks and monasteries and national organizations, and to contrast that with the many popular local traditions that we find all over China. And these vary tremendously wherever you are in China, so that you might find a temple to the sea goddess Matsu on the east coast of China, but in the center part of China, you wouldn't find a temple to her. Mm. So there are many of these kinds of local indigenous religions, but they're not organized into a kind of national system or national religion in the way that Taoism is.
Yes, thank you very much. Now, the history of China, like the geography, is so expansive and has such depth. Can you let us know what is the time frame we're talking about here with the development of Taoism?
If you read most books about Taoism, they usually start about 2,500 years ago. With the figure known as Lao Tzu, spelled L-A-O-Z-I or L-A-O-T-Z-U, who was a kind of a semi-legendary figure. I think scholars are kind of divided as to what extent he actually was a real figure, but he is a kind of key figure in Taoist history. He's authored the famous book, the Tao Te Ching, and he is regarded as a kind of a founder of the Taoism. But the Taoism didn't really come into shape in a kind of organized, systematic way until, so far as we know at least, until 500 or 600 years later, with the main founder of what today we would regard as a kind of organized Taoist religion. There's a man called Zhang Daoling, who in the year 142 organized followers into, I suppose, what we would nowadays call a kind of a theocracy. I mean, it was a system in which the political system and the religious system were fused together, and this was operated in the west of China, close to what is now Chengdu, the capital of Sichuan province. And he was the first person who really successfully got followers together, organized them into a kind of functioning religious community, and this was the kind of seed that was planted in the west of China nearly 2,000 years ago, that led onto the full flourishing of Taoism as what we would consider to be a kind of an organized religious tradition.
Thank you very much, James, for that answer. Now, Taoism is very, very interesting, and would you please take us through some core beliefs? Why don't we begin with like a worldview or perspective. What would be held sacred, or what would be the vision of the divine that was being developed there at that time?
I think in the Taoist tradition, we can say that the most sacred, the highest concept is the Tao itself. The Tao can be usually translated as the way, and this is we can think of it as the source of creativity, of power, of energy in the universe. And Taoism is interesting because it regards the Tao fundamentally as a non-personal sacred power. So unlike many religious traditions where the gods are modeled as a kind of persons, you know, they're similar to human, similar to human beings. The Taoism is quite interesting in this regard because the Tao, in its kind of original identity or form, is really a non-personal creative power, and this is the source of all life in the universe. This is what is ultimately held sacred by Taoists, and this is the highest value, the highest ideal that can be experienced in the world. But Taoism also has many gods. It has a very rich pantheon, and these gods are regarded in varying degrees as being manifestations of the Tao. So Lao Tzu, the original author of the Tao Te Ching, is regarded by Taoists as one of the key divine figures. He is regarded as a kind of human manifestation of the Tao of the Way. And if you go to many temples in China, there are many richly decorated statues of the gods who are worshipped. But I think it's important to remember that in the Taoist theology, these gods aren't really the end point of people's religious fervor or worship necessarily. That these are vehicles for people to the root, I suppose, by which people engage the Tao itself, which is regarded as the supreme, the highest, the most sacred force in the universe.
Thank you, James. Can we explore some basic concepts of Taoism, some terms and concepts? People have heard, for example, of Qi and Tai Chi, but there are so many other fascinating topics here in this area that you're very familiar with. Let's go into some of these concepts that are really unique to Taoism and the perceptions of...
One of the most intriguing concepts, especially for people from the West, is this idea of qi, and this is a word that has become part of a kind of cultural language almost in North America, but often people kind of are rather confused about what this term actually means. Qi is understood as in two distinct ways in Taoism. One is perhaps the most important way to think about this is as a kind of life force that keeps that is experienced in the body. So if we know from kind of Western medicine, we understand the body as having blood flowing to it, and you take in air from the outside and you breathe, and there are all these circulations of fluids in the body. In the Chinese understanding, what is at the base of all of this is the flowing of qi, which is throughout the body, which is a kind of a life force, something that can be felt and experienced by people who are trained in Taoist practices. There's a kind of similarity in Indian traditions with the idea of prana, which is also a kind of a life breath or life force that is important in Ayurvedic traditions in India and in yogic traditions as well. But in the Taoist tradition and also in Chinese medicine, this force is understood as described as qi. And the important thing is that for qi, for your body to be alive, for you to be growing and developing, qi must be flowing in your body. And when qi stops flowing or it becomes blocked, then this is when people get diseases. This is when people ultimately die. So one of the kind of key objectives of Taoist practice and a key component of the Taoist worldview is that we have to enable as much as possible qi to flow, right? We want people to be alive, healthy. In many ways, Taoism is a very kind of optimistic or positive religion that focuses on long life, living well, good fortune, prosperity. And all of these are part and parcel of the flowing of the qi in the body. So that's kind of one way to think about qi. And if I can just say the philosophers in China then I think took this concept and extended it to the universe as a whole. And they understood the flowing of they understood the universe as also a flowing of this kind of life force, this power. We can see it in the circulation of the stars, in the movements of the heavens, the sun, and the sun and the moon. All of these were understood as being manifestations of this divine circulation of power and energy in the universe. And what Taoists began to realize was that what goes on in the world outside us is exactly the same as what happens within our within our bodies. That there is a kind of a dynamism, a power, a vitality to the universe, and this is the same thing that we experience in our bodies while we are alive. And this becomes a kind of a sacred value in Taoism, to keep this, to nurture this this vitality, this flowing of life and energy in the world. And the ultimate source of this is the Tao itself. The Tao is the source, the origin, if you like, the kind of wellspring or the fountain from which all of this life and vitality emerges. Though we don't know, we can't see the Tao, we don't know where it is or what it is exactly, we can experience its effects in the world around us, in our bodies, in the growing and transformation of life and vitality. So Tao is never... Taoist, when you look at if you look at the world around you, to a Taoist, it's not a world of objects, of things that are static. It's not a world of building blocks or elements. It's a world of flow, a world of creativity, a world of dynamic power and transformation. Taoists see everything changing and transforming in the world around them, and in their bodies. This is a fundamental way of seeing the world, part of the Taoist worldview.
Now, with all this energy flowing and all this interconnection with all things from one source, you mentioned transformation. Could you share some of the alchemy involved in Taoism? There's a wonderful magical quality that I'm not sure if we acknowledge or know very much about in general culture. Could you share some of that tradition?
I think that Taoists celebrate life. We say that very straightforwardly. Taoists celebrate life, and early on in Chinese history, maybe at least 2,000 years ago, people began to be interested in the idea of extending life. Can we prolong our life? Do human bodies necessarily have to die at the age of 60 or 80 or 100? Is it possible for people to live to be 200 years old or 500 years old? Is it possible to transcend to some state of life that is beyond death? These were some of the kinds of spiritual questions that those people were asking in China. And people began to experiment. They began to look for ways to try and enhance the longevity, the long life of the body. People experimented with herbs, drugs, minerals, things in the natural world that were thought to have some kind of special power or special quality to help extend the life of the body or transform the life of the body into something that was that we might consider to be immortal in some way or longer than an ordinary life. And this this quest for extending life and extending vitality became woven into the Taoist tradition. And I think this took place really in two different kinds of ways. I think the earliest tradition is what people refer to normally as a kind of laboratory alchemy. We know that there were Taoists who were, in effect, alchemists of the Renaissance in the West. But instead of looking to turn base metals into gold, what they were looking for is a kind of elixir of immortality. They were looking to compound herbs and drugs and minerals and into substances that could enhance people's life. And so if you look at some of the Taoist scriptures, or some of them actually read almost like recipe books. So this is like people who are going to, in the search of Taoist masters who will teach them the secrets of how to compound or to concoct a kind of recipes of herbs and so forth to help extend the life of the body. And this really actually becomes a very dominant motif in Chinese culture as a whole. I think the idea of eating is not a kind of chore that you do, right, just to put fuel in your body, but that eating in the right way, eating the right kinds of things, can actually have a beneficial effect upon your body, can be used to help heal the body, and can be used to extend the health of the body. This is an idea that I think is quite wide, became quite widespread within within Chinese culture. So that's this kind of physical alchemy, if you like, trying to use the ingredients, the raw materials that we find around us in the world in ways that are beneficial for the health of the body. And then the second.
Thank you.
Yeah, they make. Can I just? The second tradition that developed in this kind of alchemy tradition was much more a kind of meditation tradition. This was the idea that through meditation, meditative practices, the body could be helped to regenerate and heal itself and extend the life of itself. And this wasn't by eating herbs and minerals, taking them in from the outside world, but almost the idea that the body itself contains all of the ingredients that are necessary for healing itself and for extending its own life, and that by engaging in these qi meditation practices, by moving the energy consciously and deliberately in the body through the specialized kind of training that these Taoist monks and nuns and priests and so forth receive, the body could, in effect, generate its own elixir of immortality just through engaging in these kind of meditative practices. So this scholars usually refer to as inner alchemy or internal alchemy, right? Because it didn't involve ingesting substances from outside of the body. It just involved these meditative circulation of energies within the body. But the goal is still the same: to heal the body, to extend the health of the body, to make the body in a way a kind of supercharged body, something more than ordinary life that ordinary mortals might have.
And, you know, it's so interesting, all these years later, today we know between the herbs and minerals and meditation, they were onto something. And science can show us now and measure energy and how it flows as well. So I think we get more and more of the picture today as well around the world.
I think that's very interesting, because I think that when people in the West first came across these kinds of ideas, they were dismissed as being kind of unscientific or pre-modern ideas, or not kind of magical ideas because the kind of basic assumptions and premises of this way of thinking really doesn't accord with modern science or modern Western biomedicine. But I think now we have medical doctors, people who are trained in both Western medicine and Chinese medicine, people who are very interested in trying to understand what actually was going on in these practices, and is there some kind of basis for this that can be explained scientifically. And so I think there are a lot of people now who are interested in a kind of a convergence between the kind of scientific ideas and also these kind of ancient Chinese ideas. I think that's one reason, I think, why many of these ideas and practices are becoming quite popular in North America. And I think that there's certainly in a large degree of scientific interest in these kinds of concepts now.
Thank you very much, James. We are already about halfway through our program, if you can believe it. It moves fast here. We're just going to take a break for a moment. You are listening to the Godspeed Institute on the Progressive Radio Network. We're going to take a short break, but afterwards we'll continue our conversation on Taoism with author and professor James Miller. Here is a song by the artist Peachtree called Dreams in Darkness. Stay with us.
Without light, we cannot love. Without light, we cannot love. Without light, we cannot love. But without darkness, we cannot dream. Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to the Godspeed Institute on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm your host, Carol Hallenbeck. We're talking about Taoism with author and professor James Miller. James, can we explore some more about Taoist celebrations, perhaps, ceremonies and observances?
Yes. I think, first of all, we should point out that if you go to China today, you're going to encounter really two different types of Taoism. One is what we might call a monastic Taoism, and often in China, these monasteries are located in on beautiful mountains, and there's a kind of a large pilgrimage, kind of slash tourism business that goes along with these, and these monasteries on the mountains. The monks here live in the monasteries, and they're mostly devoted to their practices. Mostly revolve around this kind of chanting prayers, chanting scriptures, and meditation. And so this is they are really focused on developing and extending their own spirituality. And that's one of the reasons why they go into the monasteries, and they're often kind of in inaccessible, remote places. And they are concentrating on kind of they're developing their own spiritual life. But also there are Taoist temples in the cities as well, and people will go to these temples, and the people normally will go to these temples in order to pray for good fortune, for prosperity, to pray to the gods for health and long life. And if you go to a temple, you will find many ordinary people going to the temple, burning sticks of incense, bowing before the statues of the gods. So this is a very kind of common way in which the Taoist religion intersects with popular religious beliefs in China. And then on the other hand, we have the Taoist religion that is what we might call a more priestly religion. These Taoist priests are married. They live in communities. They're not separated from the communities. And their job is to provide services for the ordinary people, to celebrate the life of the community, to hold rituals to mark the important seasons in the agricultural calendar, to host celebrations that are part of rural life. And to have these large-scale festivals and festivities that may be held not on a regular basis in the sense of being once a week or once a month, but maybe two or three times a year, the community would put on a big kind of festival that might last 1, 2, 3 days or a week even. These festivals are, as I said, woven into the agricultural life of China. And then I suppose the other kinds of services that Taoists provide for people will be connected with funerals, providing these kinds of religious services for people, for praying for the ancestors, and these are kind of life stage rituals. They're also part of that you might also witness in a Taoist temple.
Now, if I could ask you, because it occurred to me in the last part of the show as we were discussing the alchemy of longevity and those goals, and you just mentioned, the funeral ceremonies. What would be the Taoist perception of death and what would happen beyond?
I think the Taoism builds on the kind of general Chinese understanding of death, which is that the body has several souls inside, not just one soul, but several souls, and these souls upon death separate. So death is a process in which the souls that animate your body leave the body, which is why you die, and some of the souls go into the ground and kind of go into the underworld, really, which is the idea of underworld is a bit is not necessarily a place of punishment like a kind of Christian hell, but these souls are not part of your. They're not part of. They don't have life anymore. In the same way that we would understand life, and they are and these souls would be venerated by the family or the community, and the annual celebrations, ancestors will be prayed for, so that the life in the underworld would continue to be happy one, and that the ancestors in the underworld would send blessings upon the upon their descendants who are in the world of the living. And that's the fate of most people. Right? Most people, when they die, they will become one of these ancestors, and hopefully they will be prayed for by their children, and they will also try and take care of the children. But the professional Taoists, if you like, sought a different kind of afterlife, one in which their souls would not disappear into the earth or dissipate or be separated, but one in which they could somehow transform their bodies into a kind of spiritual body that would enable them to exist as a kind of a person, but in a spiritual way that they could kind of continue to live, even though they were dead, but continue to live kind of spiritual or transformed way, and that they wouldn't be, and that the souls wouldn't be, their soul wouldn't be kind of condemned to the usual kind of afterlife, but they would have some kind of special power or status or able to exist as persons, but in this higher power or more transformed way. And these people we might regard similar to the idea of saints, perhaps. Right? So these are not ordinary people, but people who have some kind of special status after death. And in Chinese, these people are usually regarded as being immortals or spirits or as kind of semi-divine figures. And some of them became rather famous in Chinese history and are worshipped in temples in the same way that you might go to a Catholic church that is devoted to a particular kind of a saint. I think for many of the rather kind of professional Taoists, the monks and the priests and so forth, their goal would be perhaps to hope to continue their life in this kind of transformed or transcendent state after death. And this, for many Taoists, this was the kind of the goal. Can we attain this special status after death, or are we just going to be what happens to an ordinary person? And for many Taoists, this was the goal, to attain this transcendent, transformed state after death, something that will be somehow more glorious, more beautiful than ordinary human life.
And it's very interesting to me. Recently, we were exploring, for example, Jewish mysticism and learned the concept of the soul there,
right,
as well. You know, many, many centuries ago,
yeah,
obviously, as having several layers or different components of the soul,
yeah,
or several souls, as you mentioned.
Right.
And, of course, going to the place that would be Sheol, which is just the place
right.
of the dead, not a hell, as you say.
Yes.
And of course, the whole concept of resurrection and the spiritual body. This may be a good point in the show to ask then, what would be the relationship of Taoism to other religions around the world? What is the attitude?
I think that most people in China regard Taoism as being somehow special or distinct, right? Because it is the Chinese religion, it is a religion that has... is somehow special or unique to China, And I think this question of the relationship between Taoism and other religions is one that has not really been well explored. The exception to this, I think, would be to say that because of the impact of Buddhism on Chinese culture, many Buddhist ideas became part and parcel of the Taoist vocabulary as well. So, for instance, one of the most important ideas from India in general is the idea of karma, right? That the actions that you perform in the present will have some kind of consequence in the future, and that you can't escape the consequences of your actions. Mm-hmm. And I think that this idea became very well embedded in the Chinese religious culture and became a part of the idea of Taoism as well. And I think that the Buddhist idea of compassion for saving and liberating living beings also became a very important idea in later Taoism as well. So that if you go to a Taoist monastery today and you listen to the chanting of the monks, one of the things that they will certainly be praying for is the liberation of people, from their sufferings. And this is a kind of a key theme of Buddhist spirituality, of course. And this is something that was very influential in China as well. Some people, I think it would be a mistake to think of Taoism as a kind of a self-centered spiritual quest. I think that, which is sometimes the way it seems when you read Taoist literature, people on this quest for transcendence and immortality and all of that kind of thing, and it seems very self-focused. But I think one of the things that Buddhism brought to China, especially Buddhism, was this idea of compassion for people suffering and so forth. And this became very woven into the Taoist understanding as well. I think more recently, people have begun to think about what is the relationship between, or how does Taoism compare to Christianity and other kinds of Western religions, but this isn't something that that has really been thought through very much. I think, obviously, the basic difference in Christianity is we have the idea, the Jewish-Christian-Islamic religious system, if we consider it as one religious system, that there is a God who created the world, and this God is a person, and this God created the world and is fundamentally distinct from the world, and this God is the giver of laws, of judgment, and the revealer of scriptures to the world. And I think in Taoism, because the Tao is not a personal creator, but rather a creative power, a creative source, this is a kind of fundamental distinction, you know, fundamental difference between that and this Christian idea of a God who creates the world. In the Taoism, the world isn't created by the Tao, but is the creative expression of the Tao itself. The world around us is the Tao living itself. And this is a very different idea than the Christian God, who is, I suppose, in classical Christian theology, you know, up in heaven or somewhere, something like that, somewhere separate or away from the world. Whereas in the Taoism, we can see the world as the living expression of the power of the Tao, not separate from it.
Now, from this point, which is, I think, it's really pertinent right now. Let's focus specifically on the ecological component of your work, from where
right.
you just spoke, and all the agricultural, rural ceremonies you mentioned earlier. What is the Taoist perception, then, of nature, and then what is the role of the or place of the human being therein?
I don't want to suggest that Taoists are what we would consider to be environmentalists in any kind of modern sense. But what we can say if we look at the history of Taoism, we can say that Taoists have had a very particular kind of concern for their natural environments, and the natural environment mattered to Taoists in a way that seems a bit different from other kinds of religious traditions. If you look at one of the earliest collections of ethical codes for Taoist priests, contained many different injunctions that we might consider in a modern sense to be a kind of environmental ethics. Taoists were instructed to pay attention to the natural environment, not to despoil it, not to poison waters, not to cut down trees wantonly. There seems to be some kind of concern for the natural environment that we can see in these law codes of the ethical guidelines of the early Taoists.
Because of the oneness of all things, or the connection of all things.
Well, the reason why. Is not specified in these texts. So I think it's become the work of scholars to think about why was the environment an object of concern for Taoists? Why did it matter to them so much? And I think the answer given by scholars is that in some sense nature functioned as a kind of sacred space, as a kind of sanctuary, as a kind of place of healing, as a source of healing. Nature was the area that provided the herbs and minerals for the Taoists to engage in their practices. Taoists chose to establish temples and mountains in areas of outstanding natural beauty. It seemed that where you did your practices mattered in a way that, for instance, a completely portable tradition like Islam, right? I mean, you can be a Muslim anywhere in the world, right? And you can,
right.
as long as you know where Mecca is, you can make your prayers five times a day, and the location doesn't seem to matter necessarily. Of course, there are sacred sites and the pilgrimage and that kind of thing. But the same is true in Christianity as well. You can, if you're a Catholic priest, you can say the Mass more or less anywhere.
And
that's why it's a Catholic tradition. It's a universal tradition. Whereas in Taoism, there's always been a very particular attention to specific places and paying attention to specific environments that seem to have been particularly important in the spiritual life of Taoist communities. So I think that from a very early time on, there wasn't what we could say to be like an ecological consciousness or an environmental consciousness that people have today, in the sense that, you know, there is a problem of global warming or that kind of thing. But there was attention paid to the particular spaces in which Taoists practice their religious life, and that maintaining preserving the kind of natural beauty of these particular places was an important religious concern for the Taoists.
I tell my students, if you look at
the Ten Commandments in the Bible, the Ten Commandments are basically more or less concerned with relationships between human beings and relationship between human beings and God. This is what people should be ethically concerned about. But when you look at Taoist ethical codes, there are mixed in with all of these similar concerns, you must be nice to people and don't kill and don't steal and don't lie, those familiar kinds of ethical concerns. There are also these ethical concerns regarding the natural world mixed in with those. And this gives the idea that very early on in Taoism that part of our ethical obligations as human beings is not simply to each other as human beings, but also to the concern for the space in which we live. I think we can see that this particular concern for the environment, in the local environments in which Taoist practice, was part and parcel of their religious commitments and obligations.
And that's a very, very interesting distinction that you make, where certain rules or laws that have been given are mostly for, you know, relationships between people. But, you know, there has to be a matrix in the first place of how life is allowed to happen here, the biology of it, the ecology of it, in the first place.
And I think especially, and also in the kind of modern humanist West as well, we have this idea that human beings are somehow special, different, unique, set apart from the ordinary world. We even have this idea of the environment, meaning that thing that is all around us and which is somehow separate from us. But I think one of the key insights of Taoist spirituality from a very early age is that the world around us is somehow part and parcel of the world that is inside us. That there is no ultimate distinction between the world inside the body and the world outside the body. And from that point of view, there is no environment, right? There is no thing that is around us, right? It is actually all part of us. And you can see this very simply just by being conscious about breathing, you know, which is one of the most basic Taoist practices is to focus on breathing. And when you focus on breathing, what you realize is that what you are doing in a very simple way is taking in the outside world physically in the air and everything that you breathe in. You are taking it into your body. Your body is processing this and you are breathing something out. And our bodies are more porous, more than we might think. We're constantly taking in the world and interacting with it. Psychologically, we don't think about this. We think the world is outside us and our bodies are somehow separate from the world. But I think one of the things that Taoist practices tries to train people is to thinking about that the world outside is perhaps not so outside as you might think.
That's right. That's right. James, we've come to the end of the program. It's gone so quickly. If people want in the audience want to learn more about your work and your books, can you let us know where they can go?
I think for anybody interested just to learn more about Taoism in general, my book, Taoism, A Beginner's Guide, is a fairly straightforward, a basic guide to Taoism. And I also publish a blog about religion and nature in China, which is called sustainablechina.info. Mm.
Thank you very much for being with us today, James. It's a really informative hour, and we may need to speak again in the future.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you, audience, for joining us for the Godspeed Institute today. If you would like to hear this or any of our previous shows again or send it to someone, simply go to godspeedinstitute.com. All are welcome and all have access. We hope you enjoyed the show and hope you will join us again as we continue to explore all the world's religions and spiritual belief systems. Until then, we wish you Godspeed on your journey.